Yeah, so today I'm going to be looking at a comparative study of in-field and laboratory mineralization rates of 17-beta estradiol, not 2,4-D. Unfortunately, I know my abstract said I was doing 2,4-D, but we haven't had a chance. The experiment's been running longer than expected, so we haven't had a chance to get those results yet. So estrogen is a naturally occurring hormone that's excreted by livestock. The manure can then be applied to agricultural land as a source of nutrients. Unfortunately, this can lead to environmental concerns such as runoff into surface water, as well as seepage into groundwater. And I'm sure we've all heard the stories about the male fish who are showing female characteristics. So that can be one concern from estrogens getting into water. And as of right now, I believe that the effects on humans are still undetermined. So in order to figure out what's happening, we want to understand estrogen processes in a wide range of soils. So this would be things such as the fate, where it does end up if it's absorbed to particulate matter, if it ends up in the water system, as well as the persistence. How long does it stay in the soil? How long does it stay in the water? How fast does it degrade? Now, the majority of mineralization, also known as degradation studies, are undertaken in an incubator. And for simplicity, they're generally set at a constant temperature. However, we're not sure how closely an incubator simulates these in-field mineralization curves. So my study objectives were to design an in-field microcosm technique to observe the effect of a typical growing season temperature. Keeping in mind, I did do this study in Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this. We're fairly far north. And so our typical growing season may be slightly different than the Texas typical growing season. And we maintained the moisture content at a constant 80% of field capacity. The second point, part of the experiment, was to compare these mineralization rates from the field experiment at a few different temperatures. We had it at field temperatures that we observed in the field, as well as the similar temperatures fluctuated in an incubator, as well as a constant incubator temperature as a sort of control. So my in-field experiment, there's my mouse, consisted of these microcosms. So we had the 1 liter mason jar microcosm filled with your soil, which you can see in the back here, 25 grams, 3 milliliters of acidified water, that's just to keep the moisture content fairly constant. We also had our trap here, our sodium hydroxide trap. We used a radio-labeled 17-beta estradiol. So as the compounds were being mineralized into radioactive or carbon-14-labeled carbon dioxide, they would be trapped. I lost my mouse again. Here we go. They would be trapped in here. That's the other reason why the water is acidified, so as not to trap any of the carbon dioxide. The field experiment I designed consisted of PVC pipes into the ground. We put the microcosms into the holes here. We covered up the holes with a piece of fabric, a nice lacy fabric, and that had holes so as not to let the soil go through, but to let water drain. Now, the reason why we, instead of just putting them directly into the ground, we put them in the pipes partially for safety, because we are dealing with radioactive compounds, so with a lot of, you know, shifting, shrinking, and swelling, we didn't want them to crack. As well as, if we are going to do this as an in-field technique, it needs to be practical and feasible. So digging up 144 microcosms every time you want a sample, and our sampling is for like 2, 4, 6, 8 days, that's a lot of work. So we decided to try something a bit simpler. We used 9 different soils with textures ranging from sandy loam to heavy clay to try and get a good representation of different soil properties. Now, the laboratory microcosm setup, we use the same microcosms. So I'm going to talk a bit more about the temperature treatment we used. We had our control treatment, or the constant, at 20 degrees Celsius. And that was 20 degrees Celsius, 24 hours a day for the entire treatment length. We also had our diurnal fluctuations, so we had it fluctuating. These were means that we observed in the field. We had our nightly mean of 11.5 degrees Celsius and our daily mean of 14.5 degrees Celsius. Then we had what I call our diurnal with extremes treatment. So these were just the means that we observed, but we also observed higher and lower temperatures. So as you can see here, temperatures got down to 9.8 degrees Celsius. And this is during our summer months, too, in the soil. And they got as high as 16.8. So I wanted to include those temperatures in as well, thinking they may have an effect on overall mineralization. So to look at our field results, what we can see here is this is for max CO2 production. So that's max is the total amount of mineralization at infinity based on a first order kinetic curve. You're probably not very common with these soil series, so they are titled. But if you look here, we have four different groups. And what was interesting is we did correlation between the soil properties. And as you might expect, things like organic matter to be correlated to soil property to the maximum amount of mineralization. Things pH, texture, organic matter, we found absolutely no correlations between anything. And we're still unsure why they ended up in different groups such as these. We're planning on looking at combinations of soil properties instead of soil properties by themselves, because St. Norbert and LaSalle over here are very heavy clay soil. Hisbin is a sandy soil, but then so is Halvero. Not as sandy, but it still is sandy, yet it had the highest amount of mineralization. Then when we look at K is the mineralization rate constant. Again, we have the groups, they're not the same groups as the max. And when we correlated these with soil properties, we found that they were both negatively associated with Olsen phosphorus and potassium, which, again, I see some confused looks. I don't know why that is. We, in Manitoba, we have very high potassium soils. So potassium is not a limiting factor for any microbes, as well as all the soils, the Olsen P content was also fairly high enough for crops where you wouldn't even need to add fertilizer. So again, not sure what's going on there. We'll have to look at the soil properties more to figure out what is happening. So now when we look at the lab results, the first thing I wanted to see, does the temperature treatments make a difference? So if you look here for the max, 5 out of 9 of the soils had no difference between any of the treatments. Then we had one, the control was different than both diurnals. One, the diurnal was different from the control and the diurnal with extremes. And then one, we had the control and the diurnal different, but the diurnal with extremes was not different from either of those. And then we also had one where they were all different. Whereas when we look at K, only 2 of them had no difference, and 4 of them, the control was different than both diurnals. So if we look at this, this might suggest that those extreme values that we are seeing are not extreme enough to cause a difference. So then when we go to looking at the soil series by themselves, we only have 3 groups again. Most of them are in group C with a lower, and then we have a few higher ones up here. I haven't had a chance to correlate these with soil properties yet. However, I don't, just by looking at them, and then you'll see I'll be comparing them to the ones from the field, I think we're going to run into the same issue where we haven't seen any correlation with soil properties, which is interesting. For K with the diurnal treatment, we still have the same. We have a bunch of them grouped together here at the lower end and then a few up here. Again, not the same properties as we saw, not the same soil series or in groups as we saw before. And again, I have not correlated these to soil properties yet, so we'll have to see what happens with that. Now when we get to the diurnal with extremes treatment, the rankings are similar. If you notice, we have the same top 3 soils are up there again, whether they're in the diurnal or the diurnal with extremes treatment, but we have more groups now, so they have split off a bit. K again here, we again have fairly similar rankings to what we've seen between the diurnal and the diurnal with extremes. So now to compare between the lab and the field, the majority of the soils, this is based on all of our observations, the mean observations, not just the rankings of the soil. We noticed that Deswood, Hibson, Ramada, St. Norbert, Pembina, and Isofold show no differences between the temperature treatments. And that's between all 4 temperature treatments. So the infield, the control in the incubator, the diurnal in the incubator, as well as the diurnal with extremes in the incubator. Denham had diurnal and diurnal with extremes. There was no difference between those two. The field, however, was significantly higher, which is interesting. Halvaro, the diurnal and the diurnal with extremes showed no difference. Field was significantly lower. And then LaSalle was kind of an anomaly because the diurnal with extremes was significantly higher than the field, but there was no difference between diurnal with extremes and diurnal as well as diurnal and field. And then for K, it was a bit simpler when I grouped them out. The majority of soil showed no differences between the temperature treatments, whereas Denham and Deswood, the diurnal and the diurnal with extremes showed no difference, but the field was significantly higher again. So in conclusion, between 6, and that was for the max values, and 7 for K out of 9 soils showed no difference between the lab and the field treatments, which means that it is possible to simulate field conditions in certain soils. However, before we can fully support this method, we need to figure out why some soils are reacting in some ways and why some are not following the same pattern, as we have not been able to figure out why what the differences with organic matter or pH or any of those. So we'd like to continue up with doing some maybe some sorption studies as well as further investigate the soil properties. So the other thing that I noticed that I think is really important after reading some literature about estradiol mineralization as well as looking at our field season, we need to select the appropriate temperature to represent the environment, regardless of whether or not we include the fluctuations. Because most studies, the lowest temperature that they are done at is 20 degrees Celsius. Well, last summer, you saw the highest temperature we ever reached in our soils throughout the entire summer was 16.8 degrees. We did have a fairly wet and cool summer. This summer, however, it was very hot and dry, and the maximum temperatures in the soil that we reached were only 24 degrees Celsius. So we need to, I will be comparing our 20 degree controls to the results we found, but it seems to me that instead of doing studies at 20 degrees, 30 degrees, and 40 degrees, maybe at least for people in Canada and the northern United States, we need to take that down a bit and look what happens when we lower these temperatures to see if the soils are degrading, if the estradiol is degrading within the soil. As well as I mentioned before, I would like to examine the effect of the soil properties further on mineralization in both the lab and the field. So I'd just like to acknowledge NSERC for funding this project, as well as I'd like to thank my advisor, Dr. Annemieke Fahrenhorst, for all her assistance. And then the following people on the screen helped me with technical work, as well as just some good ideas and some hard labor. Are there any questions? Yes.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that you probably want to look at in your future work to look at the soil microbial or biochemical properties.
Mm-hmm.
Those are probably directly responsible
for the. Yeah, exactly. The question was about looking at the microbial population within the soil. So actually, on that note, right now I'm working on the 2,4-D, and we've noticed that the 2,4-D has had a slowing. We're running the same experiment, essentially, as I described with 2,4-D. We've noticed the 2,4-D has had a lag time in the beginning of before it starts mineralizing, which is odd, and it hasn't been found a lot. So I've been actually attempting to grow some fungus that we found in the soil, because what we've realized is one maybe flaw with the whole infield microcosm technique is that we have it nice and wet, and we also have it's fairly warm this year, and we have a lot of oxygen because of the way it's set up. So we're almost creating the perfect incubator for different species of fungi. So we're wondering if maybe that might be affecting the microbial populations because 2,4-D is degraded by bacteria. But that is a good point. We may do a study on that to see what's in the soil. Any other questions? Yes?
I just had a really quick question. When you were talking about correlations, were you doing like simple correlations or were you doing PCAs?
No, we're doing simple correlations. That's what we want to do is we want to look and maybe try and create a map of variability. to figure out exactly how, if maybe some of the soil properties are interacting with each other, and therefore, and just figuring out which soils are similar and which soils are more different. Of course, I didn't have time to do it for this presentation because I was kind of hoping it might just, you know, give me a nice correlation between, you know, organic, and then I wouldn't have to worry about that. But unfortunately, it looks like I'm going to have to go back to the stat software and see what I can get.